Hello everyone, this is Yvonne for another episode of A to Easy, and this time we will be talking about PE. And yes, I know it's another abbreviation, but this is the medical world, so we have to kind of get used to that. Anyhow, today we will be talking about PE and how to recognize it and manage it. But first, let's say hello to Harry.
Hey everybody, it's Harry, as Yvonne just said. Okay, let's get into it. So what is a PE?
Okay, pulmonary embolism, aka PE. If we look at the name, pulmonary basically means lungs or the respiratory system. An embolism is when a blood clot, air bubble, or a piece of fat kind of dislodges and is carried through the bloodstream until it gets stuck in a vessel, causing an obstruction. So putting it together, PE is the obstruction of one or more pulmonary arteries by solid, liquid, or gaseous masses.
Okay, so what exactly is a typical pulmonary embolism made of?
So majority of pulmonary embolisms are made of blood thrombi, which typically arise from either the deep vein system in the legs or pelvis, and it's also known as deep vein thrombosis. This embolizes to the lungs through the inferior vena cava, and then it can also be caused by fat emboli during major surgical interventions, but this is very, very small print. So for year three, is typically blood thrombi.
And who gets PEs, or, you know, is it everyone?
If I have to be very, very honest, the list of risk factors is very, very extensive. So how do we remember them? So everyone, I was talking to Harry about this episode and he told me a fantastic mnemonic, which I could use, but felt too bad to take credit of it as it's not my own. It's too good not to share. So which one is it, Harry?
CT, s'il vous plaît. I'm very proud of this.
It's a great mnemonic, to be fair. Anyhow, so for everyone who didn't do French GCSE, s'il vous plaît means please in French. So if we break it down, C, you can use it to remember cancer, so any kind of malignancy. T is for trauma, so meaning fractures. T can also be used for thrombocytosis, so basically hypercoagulability, which means that you have too many platelets. Therefore, if you have too many of them, they're more likely to clump together and form a clot. And next we have S, which is for stasis or surgery, so collectively immobility. So it's either being due to being bedbound or during a long haul flight. About this, a long haul flight is not like 3-4 hours, it's like 10, 11, 12 hours. And then following on to our V, these to remind everyone of varicotriad, which is stasis, hypercoagulability, and damage to the vessel wall. And hypercoagulability can also be due to inherited conditions, and most famously that's factor V, factor 5 laden. And the last one, I promise, P reminds us of pregnancy, the pill, so the contraceptive pill, or a previous VTE, so venous thromboembolism. So if you had anything like this before.
Okay, so the risk factors for PE can be summarized by CT, s'il vous plaît, or CT-SVP, and there are lots of different things for each of them. I think a few that I'll just say again was factor 5 Leiden, which is probably the most common form of inherited hypercoagulability state. Interesting to know that if you are on the oral contraceptive pill and you have factor 5 Leiden, your risk of getting a PE increases by 35-fold compared to the normal population at that age. So it's quite a good-going risk factor. And then pregnancy is also a classic one. You're more likely to clot in pregnancy. And the most likely time you're going to clot in pregnancy is actually after pregnancy, in the post-puerperal period. I think I've vaguely pronounced that correctly. But these are the risk factors. And in the exam, you will see a load of these in the question, and that will point you towards PE.
Precisely.
So, how does the patient present?
Okay, so the most common clinical presentation is acute onset pleuritic chest pain and shortness of breath. And here I'm gonna explain what pleuritic means, because it took me ages to figure it out, and I don't know if it was just me, but if anyone else is as I was in third year, pleuritic is when it is more painful when you breathe in rather than any other point of the breathing cycle. Anyhow, away from the tangent, we said acute onset pleuritic chest pain and shortness of breath, but other things present similarly, right?
Yeah, 100%. There are like, I know 5 P's of pleuritic chest pain.
So, do you want to mention a few?
Yeah, sure. So there's pneumothorax, pleural effusion, pericarditis, PE, and pneumonia.
Exactly. So there's lots of things that can present similarly. And that's why it's important in a history station or in our exams to look out for these risk factors that we mentioned earlier. Okay, so anything else we might need to mention or ask is whether they have any hemoptysis, so it's when if they've thrown up any blood, if they have any cough. And in order to prove that you are considering PE, it is good to ask about these factors that we mentioned. So cancers, thromboembolic events, surgery, long haul flights, pregnancy or pill. But most importantly, it's important to ask if they have any leg pain or swelling, which could indicate towards a DVT.
Yeah, so the most common cause of PE, if you like, is from a DVT in the legs. So the classic thing is that if you think they've got a DVT and they've got symptoms of that, and then they're suddenly breathless, that is really pointing you towards it, is my understanding. And hemoptysis is a really big classic feature, so that's definitely something you should be asking about in history.
The reason a PE can cause hemoptysis is because it's a blockage of the artery which causes downstream ischemia and eventually necrosis, and that can manifest as bleeding.
But with all that in mind, what signs should we be asking about as well, or checking?
So on examination, you can expect tachypnea, so breathing really fast, tachycardia, so a high heartbeat, hypotension only if severe, as PE can progress into a cardiogenic shock. And then when we move to the chest, exam might be completely normal early on. However, later you might have some dullness to percussion due to pleural effusions or lobar collapse, which can be caused by the infarction. And on auscultation, our next step, you might have normal or reduced breath sounds over the area of the infarction. And then during our respiratory examination, it's important to look at the legs, if they have any red, swollen cuff in case of associated DVT.
Okay, so look for a DVT, look for respiratory signs, tachypnea, cardiac signs, tachycardia, hypertension. So what investigations would we then do?
So a really, really important investigation is ABG. Do you know what that means?
I do. an arterial blood gas.
Okay, what would we expect on an ABG?
Typically, you'd get a reduced PaO2, partial pressure of oxygen, a low partial pressure of CO2, PaCO2, and a high pH.
Exactly. So if we summarize this, it's basically a respiratory alkalosis due to hyperventilation, so breathing too fast. Tachypnea, so a fast breathing, can be caused by pain or hypoxia. This PE is an example of type 1 respiratory failure because we have a low PaO2, which means low oxygen. And this is due to ventilation perfusion mismatch because a part of the lung cannot be perfused with blood due to the blood clot. However, there are lots of things that can cause respiratory alkalosis, basically anything that causes hyperventilation. So what is the gold standard for diagnosing acute PE?
A CTPA.
Exactly. Which also, this is why Harvey's mnemonic, CT Silver Play, is also great, because it reminds us that CTPA is our gold standard. And therefore, a diagnosis of PE is confirmed by the detection of an embolism in CT pulmonary angiography, CTPA. However, as a CT scan comes with radiation risks, we use a calculation known as the WAL score in order to decide whether to perform a CTPA. And any score above 4 indicates that one should be performed. I won't discuss WAL score right now. If you guys want to learn more about it, you should look at the link we're going to be providing.
Yeah, so I think you're going to be asked to rattle off a WELL score in your head from the exam. If it's open book, then they might do, but you can easily look it up. And MedCalc, for example, is a fantastic resource for stuff like that. What you really need to know is how to interpret one. So what happens if the WELL score is below 4?
So if it is below 4, and therefore a CTPA is not exactly indicated, we can measure D-dimer levels, which can rule out PE if negative. So if you have low D-dimer, it means that PE is very, very unlikely. D-dimer is a fibrin degradation product by plasmin. So basically, it indicates that the clot is breaking down. If that is above 500 nanograms per milliliter, then a CTPA is indicated. But if it's below 500, then a PE is very unlikely.
So D-dimer is a test we can do to try and screen for a PE. It's kind of broad spectrum. It's not the best test in the world, and it can be raised by lots of other things because it's due to clot breaking down. If it's above 500, do a CTPA. Okay.
Exactly.
That's a well score if it's below 4. D-dimer, and if D-dimer is below 500, PE is unlikely. What if a CTPA is contraindicated?
So, if a patient has renal problems, contrast allergy, or if they're pregnant, there is an alternative to CTPA, which is a VQ scan, which is a ventilation perfusion scan, demonstrating whether there is a mismatch in patients with PE, which will be present if part of the lung is not being perfused. However, although in the past we used to say VQ scan is always indicated for any suspected PE in pregnant women, now CTPA can also be used. Women with suspected PE should be advised that compared with CTPA, a VQ scan might carry a slightly increased risk of childhood cancer, but it's associated with lower risk of maternal breast cancer. So in both situations, you have a very, very minimal risk, and it's really, really good to let the woman know so she can decide which one she prefers.
So CTPA and VQ scans are considered in pregnancy. It's a difficult conversation to have looking at what the radiation doses are. I think people are often really taught that CTPA is never done in pregnancy, and that's just simply not true, because think about it this way. A PE is one of the highest causes of mortality in pregnancy, and therefore we need to treat it and do something about it. You are going to struggle to have a baby delivered if the mother is not alive. So therefore it is sensible to try and diagnose it properly, and therefore a CTPA is often indicated. But on the other hand, we know a VQ scan is an alternative to a CTPA. Any other tests we should do?
So commonly an ECG is performed, and findings include sinus tachycardia, as we said before, high pulse. An ECG can also show a right bundle branch block, RBBB, which is a sign of right heart strain. And S1Q3T3 pattern is classically taught. So in SBAs, you might find this pattern, but in reality, it's not common at all. This is also known as a McGinn-White sign. And apart from SBAs, you're highly unlikely to see it in real life. Also, a chest X-ray is often done prior, and that's to exclude other differentials like pneumothorax or pneumonia, which we also said before can present with acute shortness of breath and pain, pleuritic pain. However, a pulmonary embolus is unlikely to be seen on a chest X-ray. Therefore, that's why CTPA is a gold standard.
CTPA is the gold test, but before that, you'll realistically end up doing an ECG and a chest X-ray. On ECG, you might find right bundle branch block, and that's a sign of right ventricular strain. And you might see S1Q3T3, which is really classic in exams, and when you see it, you can stop reading because it is a PE. However, in real life, you don't often see it. What it is a deep S wave in lead 1, a deep Q in lead 3, and an inverted T wave in lead 3 as well. The other sign you might find in chest X-ray is something called Westermark sign, which is sort of like this wedge-looking shape on a chest X-ray, but I don't think as an F1 you're ever realistically going to be expected to spot it, and it's pretty rare unto itself. So, let's assume our patient has a PE. Then what happens?
So, that depends on whether our patient is hemodynamically stable or not. If they're not hemodynamically stable, then we take an
A to E approach. That's the show's
exactly.
name. That's the show's name.
Therefore, you would give oxygen, a non-rebreathing mask on 15 liters, and fluids. For a massive PE, we should offer a continuous unfractionated heparin infusion and consider IV thrombolysis with alteplase or streptokinase, which are tissue plasminogen activators. However, if our patient is hemodynamically stable, therefore meaning their blood pressure is not low, anticoagulation with apixaban or rivaroxaban first line is initiated, which should be switched to oral warfarin for a minimum of 3 months after the embolism. Okay, so that's the main gist of it, but also it's important to remember that our patient is in pain, therefore analgesics should be prescribed as required.
Okay, so the dividing up of treatment is, are they stable, are they not? And for me, that classically means, do they have a blood pressure greater than 90 systolic? And if they are hemodynamically unstable, you're realistically going for thrombolysis, alteplase, streptokinase, and the idea is that the benefits outweigh the risks of having the treatment. But in patients who have a fairly stable PE, you can consider just prophylactic treatment, preventing further PEs, which could harm them, and that'll be with anticoagulation with things such as apixaban or rivaroxaban.
Exactly. So these are the main points for PE. Thank you for listening to another episode of A to Easy, and I hope everyone has a great day.
Hi everyone, this is Sally for your 30-second summary. Pulmonary embolism, PE, is the obstruction of one or more pulmonary arteries, typically from blood thrombi, which arise from the deep vein system in the legs. Patients present with acute shortness of breath, pleuritic chest pain, hemoptysis, and tachycardia. Some of the associated risk factors are immobility, hypercoagulability, pregnancy, and the pill. PE results in a type 1 respiratory failure picture, and the gold standard investigation is a CTPA. Treatment involves an A to E approach for hemodynamically unstable patients and apixaban or rivaroxaban for hemodynamically stable patients. That's everything. Thanks for listening. Bye.